Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Pleased to be joined today by Philly Senior Advisor of International Scouting, Sal Agostinelli. Sal grew up in the Bronx and played in the Cardinal system before being traded to the Phillies in the late 80s, played with Mickey Morandini and Redding, finished his playing career early 90s, became an area scout, and then the Phillies director of international scouting. How that happened is a really cool story that we'll get into. Was a part of signing some tremendous international players over the years for the Phillies, including guys like Carlos Ruiz, Ranger Suarez, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Sixto Sanchez, and plenty others that we talk about with Sal. It was a real treat to speak to him. And when we kind of started this, he was always one of the guys that I wanted to have on here because I knew he would have some amazing stories for you guys, and he certainly delivered. So without further ado, let's get right to it. Phillies Senior Advisor International Scouting, Sal Agostinelli. This is Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Our guest is Phillies Senior Advisor International Scouting and longtime Director of International Scouting, Sal Agostinelli, who joins us from his home, back from the DR this week. Sal, welcome. Appreciate a few minutes. How are you?
Oh, it's great being on, Greg, always.
So you've been with the Phillies for over 30 years. Start there. You're playing in the Cardinal system. Your first year with the Phillies was 1989. You were a teammate of Mickey Morandini in Redding. Look that one up. How did you end up in the Phillies organization in the first place? And obviously, I'm sure when you came over to Redding, you weren't envisioning, you know, another 40 years or whatever in the system.
Yeah. Well, hey, I was pretty fortunate. What happened, you know how life is. It's about being lucky. I was with the Cardinals. I got to AAA. You know, there was a bunch of catchers in front of me. I played like 5 or 6 years in the minors. I got to Louisville. And then that year, I wasn't getting a lot of playing time, and I got sent back to AA. And what I did was the following spring training, you know, I'm sorry.
Let me no, you're good.
Yeah. So the following spring training, Lee Thomas became the general manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. And he was, he was our minor league director with the Cardinals. And all of a sudden, I went at the end of spring training in 89. You know, I was working out with the AAA team. They called me in the office. They said I got traded to the Phillies. So I was like, wow. And then, I kind of drove 10 miles up the road. We were in St. Pete. Drove right up there. It was kind of weird, you know, being with the Cardinals for so long and going to another team. But I knew a lot of the players there because a lot of the – you know, players were, we play against them in spring training a lot. So I got to know them, but it's pretty, and I never envisioned myself going through, you know, playing AA, AAA for 2 or 3 years and then being an area scout. And then 97 taking over as director. And now I'm taking over my role right now. So it's been pretty exciting, very fortunate.
A lot of players obviously think about becoming coaches, when their playing career ends. Did you think about becoming a scout? How did you end up in scouting in the first place?
Well, you know, honestly, you know, Bill Giles, when I first came over, because Lee Thomas had thought wanted me to stay in development. You know, my first year I coached in 92, and I was kind of like a player coach. Back They don't have them anymore, but I was doing that. So, I don't know. Jay Hankins, who was the scouting director at the time, came through and he was like, well, you know, do you ever think about scouting? I was like, you know, I don't, you know, really know much about it. You know what I mean? So I wound up, you know, listening to me, said, look, I got an area job opened up in the Northeast and the rest was history, you know? So that's basically how it all went down.
How did you switch over to international?
Well, it's a funny story. In 1993 to 96, I was the area scout in New York City. You know, I did a lot of New York and I spoke Italian. I grew up in the Bronx and, you know, I played with a lot of ball with a lot of Spanish guys. My minor in college was Spanish and, you know, I have a teaching degree in Spanish. So during the pre-draft workout, I was in the dugout and Mike Arbuckle, I had him in the dugout. I had a bunch of Spanish guys, and then I was speaking Spanish to them. And he just kind of walked up. He goes, "You speak Spanish?" I said, "Well, I do the best I can." Yeah. And the next thing I know, he offered me the international job. So it was like, I was like, wow, very blessed. So, you know, things in life, you know, God works in funny ways, you know.
There's some overlap-ish with Spanish and Italian. It's not, they're not radically different. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's almost, you know, we conjugate a couple of verbs here and there, and it's a lot the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you've been doing the international stuff now for almost 30 years. How has it changed? What's the biggest way that it's changed over the last quarter century?
Well, you know, I wouldn't, just to tell you this, I wouldn't want to be a young guy getting into that business right now. Put it that way. When I started, it was a great opportunity for a young scout to really expedite the process of how he becomes a scout. You know, you got a little bit of money. The bonuses weren't ridiculous like they are now, crazy. And you got a really good opportunity to sign a $20,000, $10,000, $15,000 guy and really learn from your mistakes, which you never really do, but, you know, the best to your ability. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So now, over the period of time, you know, we used to sign the guys much older. Then on top of it, the money's changed. Everybody has $5 million. So every pay period, every period, people are spending, you know, five times 30 is 150 and more, you know, and international money. So it's become quite a challenge, you know, because you sign them so young. It keeps you humble, you know, it keeps you making. And then when you get a couple of guys like, you know, Rojas or Ranger or Dominguez or, you know, whoever we got to the big leagues, you know, $2,000-$8,000 or something like that, it just becomes, you know what I mean, rewarding, but it's just more difficult, I feel.
It's like a big puzzle, right? Because if you spend $2 million on one player, that's two. If you have two guys that are going to cost $2 million each, you might not be able to take both of them. You got to pick one, and then I could take three guys at $750 for one guy at 2.2. Right. Like that kind of like big puzzle. Like it's a big puzzle, right?
Yeah, it takes a lot of. I think, you know, we all try to conserve our money, do the best we can do. You know, if we love a guy, you know, when you put all your, you know, eggs in one basket, like we did with Ortiz that one year, you know, he came out doing really, really well. He had power, but it's not always a slam dunk. You know, the guys have tremendous ability, but as we know, it's difficult to make big things. You know, it's hard. It's not easy, you know?
And you have to make a decision when they're 15 and the quote unquote, like rubber meets the road for them is going to happen 6 years later at 21. And it's hard to say.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then when people hit on a guy, like, you know, what they did, you know, Seattle hit on the center fielder there, you know, it's just,
Julio,
you know,
Rodriguez. Julio.
Yeah. It becomes, you know, like, I think we all have enough humility to realize that there's, I wouldn't say luck involved, because what it is, like you said, you try to stay, okay, body type, makeup, ability, you know, just how intelligent they are, where they come from, you know, but what you don't, it's hard to take in consideration is once you give a guy that never had money a couple of $1 million, how they're going to react to it. And you don't find that out till after you give them the money.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I think that's where you wind up losing some guys. I think we never had that. In the past, you gave a guy $10,000. He wasn't a millionaire. He had to work. You know what I mean? And I think it's when you give a 14, you know, when you make a deal with a 13, 14, it's different than when you make a deal with a 21-year-old college guy who's much more mature at that age. You understand? So that's where the difference is, I think.
How have the Phillies have really invested in the complex down there? And I know you said you were down there this week. They had the graduation. What are some of the strides? How have the Phillies made some strides in the international market and the development of young international players?
Well, I will tell you this. With George Volandia, you know, with the help of Dave, I mean, the ownership, you know, I mean, we've been Middleton and, you know, Bucks. I mean, they came down for the graduation, which showed, you know, unbelievable to, you know, John and, you know, Pete came down and Georgie Volandia was down and Sam Fold was down. And, you know, I think what you know, we went from a team that, like, for instance, when you make deals with guys that are 14 years old, what you need to do is have an infrastructure to make sure they stay online all the way through. And, you know, George Volandia came up, you know, we hired some guys, some trainers to make sure that the kids that are younger have trainers. We have strength and conditioning guys. We have, you know, different guys to make sure that the guys that we're working with, you know, the guys that we have deals done with are keeping their path good. That's number one. Number two, the facility is unbelievable. I mean, it's really, really, you know, with Preston Mattingly at the helm there. I mean, you got a great program. I mean, we have programs on top of programs. We have preparatory programs. We understand more about the age differences and where guys should be at a certain age and their strength and how much agility or how much baseball knowledge, you know, all the things that, you know, because as they progress different ages, I think they need different things. And we have a grasp of, we have a way better understanding of trying to adapt to the challenges that the overall system has against, you know, for, you know, against us, you know.
When you started, right around the time you started, you guys signed Carlos Ruiz out of Panama. He was on the first Blue Claws team that Greg Legg managed. That you, yeah. You must have played with Legger at some point, right?
Absolutely. We played double and triple play together. My brother.
He was on that team, and he was an under-the-radar signing. What do you remember about uncovering Carlos?
Well, the one thing I always do is again, being lucky. This is not – what happened was is I got a call from Alan Lewis, who was one of the Panamanian Express. I don't know if you ever know that, with Omar Moreno. He played in the big leagues. Alan Lewis played in the big leagues with the Oakland, with Sal Bando and all those guys. He was the pinch runner. He was one of the fastest human beings on it. Well, he was our scout in Panama. And when I took over, so he, you know, they always call me now and then, and I go see his players. So he called me and he goes, I want you to come see this guy. This guy is the best hitter I've ever had. So I got on a plane because I'm a lunatic. I jumped right on a plane, Miami, to, you know, Tucumán and Panama City. I had to drive an hour over to another airport, got on a prop plane, flew all the way to David, got off the plane, and I went to this. It had to be 150 degrees on this field down there. And we went in there, and it was just Carlos, myself, Alan, and – hold on, I'm sorry. Yeah, Alan and the BP thrower. And when I walked in, you know, he was a second baseman.
Right.
So I hit him a few ground balls. First of all, he ran a 7-160, which was okay. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work out, you know. So – he said, but look, I think he can catch. And he got behind the plate, and he had a cannon, you know, and he was throwing real well. He got up, and we put a pitcher against him. You know, we had the BP guy, and he was hitting ropes all over the place. And then he hit really well off a live pitch, too. And anyway, so he was like, can you give me 10 grand? I said, how about 8? And now the rest was history. I mean, you know, we got lucky, and Carl's been a dear friend to me for all these years, you know. So, you know, made us all look really, really good. And plus the type of individual he is. I was at a major league tournament about a year ago down there. He took me to his ranch down there. Carlos hasn't changed one bit. He's just the same guy that he was when he was in the big leagues, you know. Great guy.
You couldn't have possibly projected what he would end up doing in his career. I'm sure, you know, nobody could at that stage. But when you sign a guy, you know, like an under the radar type like that, or many others, you know, how do you judge success? Is it like get to AA? Is it just advance a certain level? How do you judge whether a signing kind of worked?
Well, the way I look at it is value. I look at it in value. A guy, like, for instance, we traded me. We got Christian Sanchez for me. To me, that's value. Sixto Sanchez, even though he pitched a little bit, we wind up getting real Mudo for him.
Of course, yeah.
That's, to me, you know, top value if they make it to the big leagues. But, you know, value also is if a guy really has a really good minor league career and, you know, helps our prospects get to the big leagues. You know what I mean? And is a good player. And then the last one is if a guy becomes a good organizational player and he helps us as a coach or a scout in the future. We have many coaches that I've signed half, three quarters of the coaches, I always tell everybody down in Dominican or Venezuela, I go, I sign good coaches. And
Irvis Manzanillo was there, right? Samuel Luciano was there. I'm sure there are others. Those guys I remember. I don't play here. But
you know all of them. Do you know Norelis Martinez? Norelis Martinez, you probably. Well, you know,
I don't think he made it here.
How about Valoria? How about Valoria?
Uziel?
Yeah, he's there now.
I didn't even know he was there. So what's he doing? Is he in the academy?
Coaching. Yeah, he's coaching at the academy. Yep.
Oh, yeah, great guy. One of the all-time good guys that we've ever had. Like, if we had baseball camp with the kids, he would do every one of them. He did every ground ball. He'd help every kid. He was great. I'm glad he's still in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have a really good – I think we have a really good infrastructure with Volandia, you know, Derek, you know, is taking over the range right now, and I'm helping him out. So it's really a good situation internationally. I think we're in a really good spot. We just got to do the best we can to get as many good players as we can to you guys up when get them through you guys and get to the big leagues.
Sure. Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart, shop local, shop PC Richard & Son. What was the Carlos Carrasco story with the parrots and the monkey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, how'd you hear about that one? Did I tell you that sometime?
No, you... when you got the, you told the story when you got the International Scout of the Year award a few years ago.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. When it was in Las Vegas.
Yeah. I read the story about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's interesting. Chalao Mendez was a teammate of mine with the Cardinals, who's our, you know, cross checker in Venezuela. Well, he was the only scout we had down there at the time. And he called me up. He goes, I got this really good pitcher. I love him. Got a great body, whole nine yards. So I said, great, let's go take a look at him. So I flew into Caracas, and we drove from Caracas. If you know where, you know, Venezuela, it's kind of a rough road.
Sure.
So you're driving all the way out to Maracay, past Maracay, go to Valencia, go to San Felipe. And then finally, 4 or 5 hours later, you get to Barquisimeto. As we were getting to Barquisimeto, right before about 50 miles, we went through this, like, rotunda thing. And the funniest thing I ever seen is that a guy comes running up to the car. Well, because we had to slow down to make this turn. We had the windows open. This guy comes over and he shoves these parrots in the car. I mean, they had no hair. I mean, they look rugged. And then all of a sudden, he has a monkey on his back. And he's trying to sell us the monkey. And he leans over and the monkey jumps on Chalao in the front seat of the car. And he goes, just give me $100 for the monkey. And I'm like, what are we going to do with a monkey? I thought it was hilarious. It was one of them with the curly tail. It was unreal.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Did you keep it? Him?
No. We just said, get this guy out of the car. Yeah. And then we wound up driving home with Ian Carlos Carrasco. And pretty much the rest is history, you know. We got Mike Arbuckle and Wolliver in the Sam. And at that time, you know, we gave him $300,000. It was a lot of money, but... it wound up being a pretty good time for us, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Ranger and Sir Anthony, I guess they signed around the same time. Ranger's story, though, I think is interesting because, you know, again, I know he was a pretty low budget signee, and he didn't even come over to the U.S. until after like 3 or 4 full years in the Venezuelan Summer League, which I know doesn't exist anymore. But The list of players that even make the big leagues after playing 3 full years in the summer league, not coming over to the U.S. until they're probably 19 or maybe even 20 years old, is really, really short. And not only has he made it, but he's had a great career.
Yeah, he's an impact guy. I mean, he's a good number 3 starter. We, you know, I'll tell you, Ranger was an outfielder when he came to us. So he had, you know, he was a pitcher, outfielder. Once we saw him hit, we knew that he wasn't going to, you know, that wasn't, he got on the mound he had just a loose arm, but it was a crude delivery. You know, the arm worked really clean. And, you know, it's funny. I read my report on him and it's funny. I said, if all stars align, this guy could be a really good one, you know, and, you know, I say that every once in a while, once in a million years, you get lucky. And that's truly what it is. It's not that I knew. It's just that he had the body type, the arm work. As you can tell, he's very athletic. You know, the guy, one of the best fielders, you know.
Tremendous, yeah.
But the thing was that first year he had trouble with his command. But that next year, if you look at the numbers, go ahead, you could probably say it.
What, he walked like two guys in 70 innings?
No, one.
One.
Yeah,
okay.
One guy. And he had like 90, 80, whatever, strikeouts. It was like some incredible thing. And once he did that and he came over to the States, it was pretty much, you know. But, you know, the other thing about Ranger, he has a unique makeup. Like, his makeup is, he really, really believes in himself. I learned a lot. I mean, to make it to the big leagues, there's so many negative things that happen. You got to have, you know, really that type. And I don't think everybody has to have that type. Not all the same makeup. But you truly got to believe in yourself. When all the negative things happen in baseball, you lose a lot of guys because when things go bad, guys just don't know, you know, when, you know, the quicksand starts coming in, they just can't get out of it. You know what I mean? But Ranger truly believes, as you could tell, you know, people, you know, like, oh, man, he's arrogant out there sometimes. But, you know, I don't know too many players that are not, you know what I mean, that are good.
Nothing bothers him. It just goes, he'll just let it whiz right on by. Nothing bothers him whatsoever.
Exactly. And, you know, same. And then you get a guy like Sir Anthony, who, in my opinion, always had an electric arm, always threw really, really hard. But he was very straight at the time. And he just needed to learn how to manipulate the ball a little bit. And with the coaching and everybody, they did such a good job. But there's a guy, I mean, perfect example of makeup. I mean, you know Sir Anthony. I mean, Sir Anthony's an unbelievable guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's the type of guy you want your daughter to marry. So, you know, he's just a good kid. And we're just really fortunate to have him, you know?
Yeah, he was here in 2016. And then in 2021, he comes back to rehab. And I hadn't seen him in 5 years. In the clubhouse, he walks in the locker room immediately. Like, we make eye contact. Remembered, Kemp comes over, says, "How you doing?" And we just kind of BS for a few. Great guy, and a lot of guys wouldn't do that and wouldn't remember, but no, he did. It was, he's a really good guy. I do want to ask you about Sixto because I've been here for 15 years. The two players that I would say, just from like an electricity standpoint, are in a class by themselves were Painter and Sixto. Right. And I know people kind of forget about Sixto because he's gotten hurt and obviously got traded. And what happened to him with the injuries is obviously unfortunate. But, man, he was filthy. And just every day when he pitched, it was an event. And I know he was kind of an under the radar. There was a story, right? Like he was a shortstop. And then you needed him to throw to a catcher that you were scouting. There's some truth to that one?
Yeah, this is the story. First of all, one of our scouts was dating his sister. But that was the first one. But we brought him in because we were working out a Cuban guy, and we brought him to pitch to the Cuban guy. So I couldn't get there that day. So I sent Bart Braun in to see him, the Cuban guy.
Right.
And Bart, you know, God rest his soul, you know, because I love that guy. You know, I don't know if you ever get that, had the privilege of meeting him.
I did.
Unbelievable scout. I mean, I learned so much from Bart. But I sent him over there to the tryout, and a couple of scouts are there, and they needed a guy to pitch. So they brought, obviously, our scout was dating his sister. They needed another guy. He was a shortstop. He got on the mound. So Bart goes to me, forget about the Cuban guy. He goes, I got a guy here. So I said, how much you want? He goes, give me $35,000. We could sign this guy right now. I said, sign him. You know, and he signed him. So I want to give the credit to Bart Braun for signing him. And then when I saw him pitch, I was like, what the hell? $35,000. Anyway, long story short, that's how things happen. You get lucky. And I just feel bad that he got hurt because he is a good kid, you know?
How does a guy like that slip through the cracks?
You know why? Because we're signing kids so early to me. it's almost a time period where you have to be there, you know, when they're breaking. Like, you know, I saw a kid yesterday. The kid has a lot of ability, but he's so weak. He's so young that how much can you really give, you know, like how much can you do to, you know, give that guy money, you know, not give him money now, obviously you don't sign him, but I think that's why the international market is so difficult, because you're not scouting 1 year. Right. You have to be there you literally have to be there when they break. And especially the pitchers, you know what I mean? Because pitchers are weird. You know, many pitchers don't get their velo till later in life. Mm-hmm. 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. I mean, look at Luis Garcia. I signed him out of a tryout camp. Did he pitch for you guys at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Garcia.
No, Luis Garcia, the one that's in the big leagues with the Padres, remember? I don't know if you know.
No, he never played here.
Oh, never played. But anyway, he was a guy. He pitched for the Newark Bears and got cut from the Newark Bears. So a guy called me, said he's throwing really, really hard. He was cutting hair for a living. I went over and took a look at him. Charlie Manuel was the manager of the team. We were watching these big league guys in the bullpen. Anyway, he came in. I called him up. I said, fly down to Tampa. And he came in through a couple of bullpens. And he went from rookie ball to the big leagues in 1 year. You know what I mean? It's just sometimes they figure it out. You know, a lot of guys figure it out. I think we're trying. You know, I think the time period with which we're seeing these players, sometimes they're just too young to really, you know, that they're feeling where they're going to be and all that stuff. You know, I really, truly believe that.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you about a million guys. I heard good things about William Bergoya, Starling Caba, and Eduardo Tite. Tight, is that how you pronounce? Tight. Yeah,
you're picking up the three best. Yeah. Tight's three. Cobb is an electric shortstop who can hit. He runs really well. He's a good player. Bergoya's got some of the best bat to ball skills that I've ever seen on a player. You know what I mean? He, you know, his other tools are good, but the bat is just like he doesn't strike out much. Puts the ball in play.
You can't teach that.
That's the thing. You're right. I think we try to, you know, dream on guys, but, you know.
Like a guy can always get a little faster. He can get a little stronger. But you can't – the hand-eye coordination at that elite level, you either have it or you don't.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Tait was like a guy that was – it's kind of weird story in Panama. He was kind of a chunkier guy, you know, kind of just, you know, just kind of some baby fat on him. When we saw him, he always raked. He raked. I mean, literally could hit. And now he just blew up and became taller, stronger, and he's a guy. He's really a guy. He's going to be a good one, hopefully. You know, I'm praying to God. You know, just hoping.
Yeah. When you reflect back on your career, I'm still going, obviously, but, you know, what stands out and what do you look back on? What are some of the fond memories that you have looking back over the last, you know, 35 years?
I think it's just been like such a great the Phillies gave me an opportunity to go out and kind of, you know, do my thing. And I've been all over the world, you know, Japan, Korea, Taiwan. You know, it's a shame that we just haven't been able to dip into the Pacific Rim market as much as we like. We've been on all the guys. We've done our homework. You know, it's just, you know how it is. I mean,
sure.
You know, most of they all want to go to the dock. I don't know if they want to just go, but, you know, we did our due diligence.
You got Lee. Who got traded, but that was a good one. And you got Pond.
Yeah. Pond right. Will be That's here. A good one. Yeah. You make me feel good about
there
that.
There you go.
Yeah. But we've spent so much time going out there and, you know, and basically thinking about some of the big leaguers that have come out, you know, like Kuroda, we put a big offer on him. We offered him $36 million. He signed for 44. But anyway, I'm talking about just going around the world and seeing all the players and getting to know and you know, I've been really fortunate because, you know, we grew up in a tough neighborhood in the Bronx, and, you know, I kind of could relate to the kids in the Dominican and Venezuela that were poor. You know, obviously I wasn't as poor as that, but, you know, just, you know, I always learn to appreciate, you know, when I see these kids, God has blessed me to be able to see that. So I never forget the type of appreciation I have for what these kids go through to try to get to the big leagues. There's not a lot of, you know, forward movement in their career other than maybe being an athlete or something like that. And what the Phillies have done by putting education for all these kids. I mean, we had nine guys graduate on Monday.
Yeah, that's great.
Nine guys graduate. Yeah. So, you know, I know they have a chance. And, with, you know, Middleton and Dave and Georgie, you know, and Sam and all, and everybody, it's been really, really. So, I mean, like I said, I've been really, really blessed. But, you know, I think, you know, I fly down there all the time and I come home and I look at all the people that I grew up, you know, I live on Long Island and, you know, we live down in Jersey, you know, you don't get a chance to see, you know, the poverty that I see all the time. And sometimes, you know, if you don't see it enough, you forget it, you know, and I really like, you know, it humbles me to be, you know, to be appreciative of the fact that I'm able to see that all the time and appreciate what I got, you know.
How many trips will you make there in a year?
Oh, a lot. I probably go to Dominican at least 20 times a year, maybe more. Mexico, I go there five, six, just a second. I got to go 5-6 times a year. You know, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, I'm there at least 3-4 times a year. But like Venezuela, I just came back. I'm going next week. You know, now I got a visa to go there. For a while, I couldn't go there. You know, so, you know, because they weren't giving out visas to go there. But Colombia, yeah. So, you know, do at least, you know, 30 to 40 international trips a year, you know.
And then so, last question. Are you also the Long Island scout? Phillies have had a bunch of guys from Long Island over the years. Nick Fanny, Ben Brown, Logan O'Hoppe. Who am I missing?
You got
Willie Carmona, Vito Frischa.
Yeah, you got them all. Yeah. You know, one thing, I run a trip to the Dominican. Actually, we're going to do it next month in February. And all those kids came on my trip, you know, and I get to know them. Like, we were very fortunate to get Logan O'Hoppe. He came on my trip to the DR 4 years in a row. And, you
like
know,
when he was in high school?
When he was in high school at St. John the Baptist. And that's why when we got to that, a little bit later on, I was like, Johnny, let's take this guy. This guy's going to be okay. So we get kind of lucky. And Ben Brown, I mean, come on, 32nd round. And, you know, so I kind of get Alex Agostino up there and Tom Downey. And we kind of have that area, you know, this area up here, you know, we know all the players and we get to see him a lot. Now, you know, kind of passing along to Brian Barber. Hopefully he, you know, signs a couple of the guys. But, yeah, we had a lot of guys. It's a shame what happened to Corey Phelan. You know, he never got a chance to come up to you. But what a wonderful kid. I know him, you know, I know his family, you know, I knew him so much. And, but yeah, there's been quite a few guys. I'm trying to think. I think there was one more guy, Kyle Young.
Kyle Young. Yeah. Of course.
Did he pitch for you?
Yeah. Absolutely.
He was good, man. I can't believe
he was good.
He
6 foot 10. I know. Well, Logan and Ben, I mean, they're all those guys, they're all top class, great guys. Like Logan, I met his parents a few times. They're just super nice. And you could see, you know, he's a great guy. And so is Ben. And so is Vito. Like it was a really good group of guys. Nick Fanny, I met his dad a few times. I called both of his no-hit. He threw two no-hitters. So I called both of them that year. And it was a shame he kept, got hurt too. But yeah, it's a great group of guys.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll keep streaming them in there. Well, at least we got one. We got a good, you know, we got Marsh for O'Hoppe, which was a great trade.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
You know, so.
Well, Sal, thanks for a few minutes. I kept you longer than I said, but it was a lot of fun. And let me know when you want to come out to a Blue Claws game this year. We'd love to see you.
Greg, love to have. Hey, listen, it's always great seeing you. And I know I like to talk a lot, but
me too.
I love doing this, you know.
Yeah, sounds good. Come on down. We'll find a good. There's a couple good Italian restaurants we'll go to.
Fantastic, Greg. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thanks to Sal Agostinelli, Phillies Senior Advisor International Scouting, for joining us here on Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower cost, personal attention, and outstanding service. Call us today at 732-722-5880. 732-722-5880. To learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. Blue Claws open the home schedule on end the season on Friday, April the 5th, 75-ish days away, depending on when you listen to this. 75 is officially Sunday the 21st, is 75 days to go until opening night at the Jersey Shore. So we'll have, as we get closer to spring training, Phillies pitchers and catchers at the big league level will report on Valentine's Day, February the 14th. We'll have a few more episodes where we start to kind of dig into guys that could be here with the Blue Claws come opening day 2024. So certainly looking forward to that. The Phillies this week actually announced a series of players that will be non-roster invites to spring training. Several guys that played for the Blue Claws: Mick Abel, pitcher from 2022, Carlos De La Cruz, outfielder from 2019, 2021, and a little 2022, Scott Kingery, who was here back in 2015, Matt Kroon, who was here in 2018, and then rehabbed here this past summer. You may remember Griff McGarry was here a little bit at the end of 2021, and then most of 2022, or half of 2022, and Tyler McKay, a right-handed pitcher, who was here 19, 21, and parts of 22. So congrats to those guys, and they'll get really, obviously, a fun experience, but a great opportunity for them to get a lot of time at big league spring training this year. So we certainly wish those guys the best and congratulate them on getting those non-roster invitations. Blue Claws have not yet announced a coaching staff. That could be coming up pretty soon, just based on a tradition that usually happens by early February at the absolute latest. So coming closer to that. So keep an eye on blueclaws.com for that information if and when it becomes available. So a lot going on, but we did want to check in. We were grateful for Sal for joining us here today. Hopefully we'll get him out to a couple of games at some point this summer. That'll wrap it up for this episode 86 of Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Baseball will be here very, very soon. Less than a month to pitchers and catchers, and 11 weeks till opening night at the Jersey Shore on April the 5th. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.